Hello, everyone. This is Cecile.
Yeah. Tell them what we're doing today.
We're doing episode 2.
Yeah. Episode 2. Double Exposure. The podcast where we talk about movies and other things.
That was really good. Thank you. It was a good radio voice. Don't do that.
On today's episode, again, we're going to be talking about two movies, which we already brought up, are Seal,
The Handmaiden,
yes, and Paranoid Park. Boom, 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 boom,
boom, boom, boom, boom. Where's our soundboard? We got to fix the sounds on there.
Yeah, true. Got to get an air horn ASAP.
We need an air horn. That's the last thing we fucking need.
Honestly, I think it's the next thing we need, actually. It's going to be a great time. So let's just get into it. Thanks again for listening. This is a podcast where we talk about movies and stuff. So, Seal.
They know.
I know. But sometimes I don't know where to start. So I have to remind myself where I am because I kind of felt lost for a moment there.
We're here. We're now. And we literally just turned off the TV. We just watched Paranoid Park.
Yeah. So maybe let's just start there because that's freshest.
It's fresh in our brains.
Okay. So we just watched Paranoid Park. Directed by Gus Van Sant, came out in what, like?
2007.
Have you ever seen a movie that looked more like 2007?
Absolutely not.
No.
Especially since we were school age kids about the same age as they were in the movie.
Yeah.
Well, they were a little older.
Right. Because they were supposed to be, what, like 16? Because he was like taking his mom's car.
Yeah. And but roughly. School age is the point.
School
it
age,
looked
right.
The same.
Yeah. Styles were the same. Trends were the same.
I swear I knew all of those boys.
Yeah.
I met all of you in middle school. They're so eerily familiar.
Yeah, and all the flippy hair. What was that brand? Zoo York.
And like the etnies.
Oh,
the shoes
no.
With the giant tongues.
And honestly, the eyeliner. There was like pounds of the eyeliner all the way around everybody's eyes.
Well, that's Taylor Momsen's. Look.
True.
Taylor Momsen was in this movie.
Taylor Momsen was also in Gossip Girl and Spy Kids 2.
She was?
Yes. She was the president's daughter in Spy Kids 2.
I don't think I remember Spy Kids 2.
That's the one with Steve Buscemi and the, you know, where he makes all the hybrid animals on the island? With like Gary and Gertie Giggles.
That one is just much foggier in my memory. We got to do a Spy Kids episode.
I'm writing it down. Spy Kids.
The biggest Sharpie.
Yeah, everybody should know I'm writing on my tiny notepad with a giant Sharpie right now.
I probably bled through like 15
no.
pages.
None.
Wow, it's a good notepad.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And she was in The Grinch. She was
Cindy Lou
Who. Cindy Lou Who. Yeah. Where are you, Christmas?
Okay. Back to the movie.
Yeah, Paranoid Park. So, what was your first impressions?
Right, because you've seen this before.
Yeah.
This was my first time.
Yep.
I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
I was a little bored.
Okay.
I wouldn't say that I, like, just didn't like it, but I was bored.
Sure. So on that first rating of being, like, how you felt watching it, remember, what was our two rating systems was how you felt watching the movie versus, like, how you actually feel about the movie itself.
Like, once you reflect
for yeah,
a moment.
Yeah,
yeah. So watching it, I feel like it's low.
Low.
Four.
Below
average.
Got it. Hey, that's where I was for Mulholland.
That's true.
Yeah. So yeah. I get it.
Didn't hold the attention. All of those shots that were just so long of almost nothing.
Yeah.
Like, I understand what they're trying to do is, like, you know, like some major event happens in your life. And like the way that it really feels is like all of these long stretches of empty time in between the big scary things.
Right.
So like, I get how it was kind of supposed to be realistic.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean I liked watching it.
Sure. Fair. How did you feel? But you liked Elephant, the other Gus Van Sant movie that we
I liked Elephant more.
Yeah.
It's also been a long time since I've watched that one. I wonder how I would feel going back to it now.
Yeah.
But I remember being much more struck.
Sure. And I feel like Elephant definitely had a scarier, like more palpable plot going on. Like,
yeah. The tension was different.
Right. So for people who haven't seen Paranoid Park, it is about a 16-year-old boy. And throughout the movie, you're kind of trying to figure out what he's going through, and you're not really sure. Like, he...
Something happened. He's upset.
Yeah. Pretty much, he's just very sad. There's a lot of Elliot Smith going on, and he essentially finds this new skate park to go to with his friends, and it's like this, like, dirty punk skate park, whatever.
Paranoid Park.
Paranoid Park is what it's called. And so, you know, he's like a teenager, so he's like intimidated to go there, but does, and it's kind of this,
with all the crust punks.
Yeah, and it's kind of this big to do, and then, as always, chaos ensues.
Chaos ensues.
Except for in this case, it is a very mellow chaos, because I do think they're trying to put you in, like, real time, like, you are just, like,
yeah,
with him.
Yeah.
Going through it.
Like, you kind of just have to be bored in math class for an hour, even though all this other stuff is happening in your life.
Yeah.
So, like, makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to say that it was bad.
Mm-hmm.
But, I was bored. I already said that. We covered that.
But, yeah, and I feel like it was... Paranoid Park was one of the first movies that I saw that got me into wanting to both make movies and, like, watch movies... For, like, a deeper than just, like, pure enjoyment.
Yeah.
And...
How old were you when you watched it the first time?
I think...
Like, was it when it came out?
No. I was in seventh grade then. So we were 12. Nope. You're older than that. Anyway, I was in 10th grade, I think. So 2010. And I watched it and just remember thinking that it seemed like something that I could do and being kind of inspired by like, oh, like it doesn't have to be this like big production, big thing to have this kind of like deeper impact on a person.
Yeah.
So a movie does have like a very special place in my heart, but at the same time, I do agree that like watching it again, it does get...
A lot of just, you know, walking scenes.
Yeah.
Or I'm trying to think of some other ones. Like, he just got dressed like 100 times.
True, he did. He did get dressed a lot.
Like, we just watched him put on clothes for at least like 10 minutes of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the rhythm of daily life.
Yeah. It's kind of like very much so, like a slice of life kind of.
Mm-hmm.
But he is like dealing with...
We can do spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
He killed a man.
He killed a man!
In a really gruesome way. Like, I did not expect that. For the rest of this movie being so mellow and, like, everyday mediocre, like, the way that this man died and then them showing him, like, literally cut in half.
Yeah, he gets hit by a train. Yeah, he gets hit by a train. And our main character, Alex, is hopping on a freight train with some crust punk he met at Paranoid Park.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy is a security guard, and he's trying to get him down, and he just, like, whaps him with the board. And to make him stop, you know.
Trying to hit him off the train.
Right. And then he ends up falling to his death. Not good.
Not good. And then he was, like, still alive and, like, crawling towards Alex. Like, spooky imagery.
Yeah.
And, like, you know, but again, compared to the rest of it, it was like, where is this coming from?
Yeah, because it was almost like you just, like, lived through the trauma with him.
Yeah.
Which, like, I feel like I just saw that, I was on Wikipedia while watching it this time, and saw that the budget for this movie was, like, $3,000. $3,000, $3 million. $3
million. $3,000.
Hello, no, $3 million. And it's like, they just spent that all on those guts.
Yeah, they had to have.
like it was, yeah.
I was also on the Wikipedia page.
Yeah, what did you find?
I mean, probably the same thing as you.
I only read the first paragraph. I didn't get very deep.
Okay, I went a little further than that at least. But you might know these things anyway since you're already familiar with it on a more intimate level. But all those kids were casted off MySpace. Did you know that?
Mm-mm.
There is, so Gus, our buddy Gus,
yeah,
did an Vance open, Hamm. We're on a first name basis.
Sorry, forgot. Gus, yeah, you and Gus.
Gus put out an open casting call on MySpace, and that is how he casted everyone.
Really?
Yep, and so, like, he was looking for skateboarders specifically, obviously. And, I mean, that's just so 2006 or 7 yeah. or whenever this was actually happening.
Yeah.
Like, and then people just responded to it. Like, all of these people are pretty, except for Taylor.
Yeah.
Gotta
get that big first name basis. We gotta get that big ticket actor
yeah,
in
somewhere.
The scene. Yeah.
And she was good for that. Like, that's, it was Jenny from Gossip Girl, just in a character. So.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But none of those other people, at least the person who played Alex and like his best friend, I know for sure, like zero acting experience.
Yeah.
And apparently he wanted it that way.
Yeah. Cause you can tell.
Yeah.
Cause they don't sound like actors. They sound like kids reading.
Yeah, exactly.
But like one thing that I've always loved too, especially like in this movie and then, cause this movie I remember seeing and then it just like sprouted my, I am having a hard time with words over here right now. Like, it really sprouted my interest into this, like, kind of gritty movie genre. And so, like, I started with that and then went to, like, Larry Clark with Kids or Harmony Korine with Gummo and these, and, like, these kind of nasty, really dirty movies that you'd watch where you're, like, you feel like you want to take a shower afterwards because it's so realistic and so horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And I love them for that. But one thing that I do like that most of those do, especially in their older movies, is cast people who aren't real actors or who have no experience yet.
Yeah.
And so, like, you can tell there's, like, this, like, bit of, like, authenticity to everybody because they're just kind of just there doing it.
They're not actors. They're kids.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, the point.
Yeah. And I really like that noise.
I feel like especially with younger kids, like, you can tell much more.
Yeah.
I mean, acting is a craft.
Acting is a craft. It really did, like, spark this, like, interest into this genre of movies. And it really had, like, influenced my, I'm out of breath, thinking really hard. it really influenced, like, my desire to be, like, a photographer, desire to be a filmmaker in any sense, and really, like, pushed me forward in
self-expression.
Yes. And to see that it could just, like, you can, like, highlight or maybe even, might I say, low light these, like, life experiences.
I mean, that's nice.
Yeah.
Nice analogy.
Thank you. But
it's cute that the movie is also about self-expression.
Oh, true.
Like, he's writing about his experience.
Yeah.
And for the first time, not really, like, you know, doing it for anyone but himself.
Right.
Interesting.
I didn't really think about that. That's really sweet, actually. I really did like some of the characters. I loved the friend, the girl who...
Macy
or something like that, yeah.
I think it was Macy.
Maybe it's because I really identified with her as well. Like, especially rewatching it this time. Like, the friend. Like, I liked her.
And I'm like the go-getter friend.
Yeah.
Like, that I'm going to go up to you and talk to you no matter how awkward I am.
Yeah. And, I mean, she loved talking about the war, so she's obviously...
So what do you think about the war?
Socially. Very socially involved.
Oh, it's so sweet.
I know. I loved it.
Hearing little kids say the, I mean, they're not little, but hearing young people say the war.
Yeah. Like,
it's just such a weird contrast.
Especially, like, to be like, it's 2021 and they're talking about, like, 2007.
Yeah. They're talking about Iraq.
Yeah. So what's happening in Iraq? And he's like, I don't know. She's like, why aren't you reading the newspaper? He's like, I don't know. I'm 12.
Oh my God. It's so cute.
Mm-hmm.
There's some cameos in this.
What?
Did you know that? I'm going back to the Wikipedia page.
No.
Alex's dad is a pro skater in real life.
Oh, really?
I didn't recognize the name. His name's Jay Smay Williamson. Smay is a nickname, like in quotes. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So he's not Tony Hawk.
No. Well, he's not Tony Hawk.
There are more famous skateboarders other than Tony Hawk.
Hard to believe.
Huh. You learn something new every day.
The second one was the uncle was Christopher Doyle, who was the cinematographer.
Wow. Just plop them in.
Just plop them right in, all the adults.
Yeah.
Like there's only like two adult scenes in the entire movie, and it's cameos.
That's kind of cute. I like that. I did think while watching it this time that dad was heavily tattooed. And not that like changed like his role as a dad or something, but I was like, huh.
It seemed almost against what they were trying to portray him as.
Yeah.
Like nothing wrong with tattoo dads, but like they were supposed to be like, you know, the conservative parents.
Yeah.
The dad less so than the mom, but still.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I mean, hey, I'm going to grow up and be a tattoo dad. There's nothing against him. I just was, it was something that I noted in my mind.
Yeah, because he was a pro skater.
The more you know.
Thanks, Wikipedia.
Thank you, Wikipedia, but I would have rather seen Tony Hawk.
They couldn't afford him with that $3 million budget.
Maybe. True. You're right. He was too busy doing like Jackass stuff.
Yeah, making his video games.
Have you ever played a Tony Hawk video game?
Probably when I was, you know, probably in 2007.
You think they make those for the Switch?
Should we look into that?
We should look into that. What if we start playing Pro Skate? Isn't it called Skate or Pro Skate or
skateboard game?
Tony Hawk. He is in a few movies.
Yeah, he makes some other appearances. He's had a shining career.
Yeah, I never skateboarded in my life, and I know exactly who he is.
Never forget who he is.
No, love him. Shout out to Tony Hawk today.
With a name like Tony Hawk also. Do you think that's his real name?
Anthony Hawk. I don't know. What is it?
I'm looking
it's probably up. His real name.
I don't know. It seems a little too convenient. Anthony Frank Hawk.
Frank?
That's his real name.
Anthony Frank Hawk. Can you imagine being like in trouble and your parents being like, Anthony Frank Hawk? I'm like, no.
It's Frank and Hawk together sound kind of funny. No wonder he just goes by Tony Hawk.
True. Maybe it's a family name.
Anyway. What else do we need to talk about in this movie?
Well, I don't know. So I guess for me, rewatching it, I would give it a new rating because I did get kind of, I did have a hard time holding it. I had a hard time paying attention to this movie as well, rewatching it now. I would rate it higher than Mulholland Drive. So I'd say probably just watching it, probably like a 5 or 6.
Okay.
But not much higher. Because I do feel like it was one that I just would space out and tune into something else. And
yeah,
like I'd look back and he was doing the same thing.
Exactly. Like if I hadn't been watching it with the purpose of recording a podcast about it later, I probably would have paid much less attention.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But I was kind of making myself focus because I was like, I have to know my shit later.
Yeah. And I feel like there's parts of it that I really like. Like I love this, like the cinematography of it. I think that it's like, if I think of it as just like a collage of photos kind of like strung together, like I really love it. Like if I was going through that book instead of watching it as a movie, I would really, really love it.
That is definitely much more like accurate to the feeling.
Yeah.
It's like if you were paging through an album.
Yeah.
That's how it felt watching it.
Yeah. And that I do really like.
Like everything was very intentional.
Right. Exactly.
It had to be if you were going to spend 3 minutes on it.
True. True.
Whoa. A little spice about it.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that if I wasn't so sentimental about it too, I might have a different.
Sure. But I mean, that's, you know, your sentimentality still is part of it.
True. Yeah. And so
still a way to read a movie.
Right. And it was a book, right? Like it was a book first. Mm-hmm. And then Gus Van Sant got it, wrote the screenplay for it in like a day or something like crazy like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then like made the movie pretty much.
Yeah. He was like working on something else in that moment and he just dropped everything. Like he was working on getting funding and then read this book. Scrapped the whole other idea and used the funding for this instead.
Like, I wonder what it would be like to read the book.
Yeah. Well, I know Gus was also a young boarder in Portland.
So it probably just, like, really struck some chords.
Yeah, he was like, oh, this is me. Yeah. I gotta make this.
Right.
So there's that.
Sentimental.
It is.
The whole thing. The project was sentimental. My experience with it is sentimental.
And if you don't have any sentiment with it, you might get really bored.
Mm-hmm. But it'd be nice to just kind of have on if you were, like, maybe doing something else.
Yeah, it's still, like the subject matter, I think, is really good. Like, you know, I feel like the first time that, like, real shame or guilt is introduced to you as a kid is like a big moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so like that as like, you know, the energy about it was cool and good. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, it's just kind of, it's definitely a different kind of coming of age story that we don't get to see a lot. Yeah. Cause it's not like flashy, exciting, like you're going through this stuff. It was just kind of mundane, which is really what it's like growing up.
Like you go to school and whatever, sit through the biology lab. Honestly, yeah. It's kind of hard seeing some of those scenes. I'm like, oh my God, I remember.
You know what I did love though? One scene that I really, really love so much actually is when that little brother is telling the scene from Napoleon Dynamite.
It's a word for word.
It's honestly so funny because it's like, that's what I do 3 days a week. Is like kids, I have to talk to kids and they want to tell me stories about things that I've seen or know, or like, it's not just like
play by play.
Yes, as if I don't know exactly what happens. But here's a question: are we doing that right now?
Yeah, but we're not dumb kids.
You sure? Are you sure?
Well, it's funny because when you said that, I thought you were going to say, like, when you said that's what I do 3 days a week, I thought you were going to say, like, you recount Napoleon Dynamite to people 3 days a week. And well, I'm like, I mean, maybe sub in Shrek instead of Napoleon Dynamite, and you do that.
Yeah, did I tell you that? So for school, I started school last week, and we all had to go around the room, the Zoom room, you know, 2021, and say, like, one unique thing about us as we were going around being like, hey, this is blah, 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 my name, this is why I'm in this class. One unique thing about me is, and everybody was like, I know 4 languages. I went to this place once or blah, you know, like kind of impressive things. I'm sitting there like, I have no idea what the hell I'm going to say. You know what I said? Did I tell you this already?
I don't remember the punchline.
I said, my name is Jaylee. I'm in this class because whatever. And one unique thing about me is that I know every word to School of Rock. And that's like, and my teacher was like, okay. And like, everybody, and obviously it's Zoom, so there is no, like, I can't, like, get gauged for, like, how my joke landed. Because it's not just a joke, because it is the truth. And
you do.
And I think that maybe some bonus content could be a watch along with me, but you'd listen to me voice over every character in the School of Rock. Let me know if you want to see that.
I don't.
You don't have to. You. But wouldn't that be good?
I feel like you should. It shouldn't be a watch along. You should just sit in front of the microphone and record the whole thing.
That's a good idea.
And I will, you know, take a photo, make sure people know there's no script in front of you.
I just have to watch. I just want the move. I need to be watching the move so I can remember timing and things.
Oh, sure.
You know, but other than that, I'm ready to go.
We'll put it on mute.
Yeah, it'll just be me.
Yeah, that'll be a great bonus content. stay tuned. Join our Patreon. Yeah, $5 a month. Yeah, like,
this is a shameless plug. Please follow us on a Patreon and on Twitter.
Do you want to see Jaylee recite all of School of Rock? $5 a month.
My teacher does not want to see that, so I will do it for you instead.
I'd pay that.
You don't have to. You can have it for free, Seal.
Well,
you're so
and
lucky.
And technically, we're splitting that $5.
$2.50 for me. $2.50 for you.
What about our producer?
Okay. I don't know math, so that's the end of that. Like, we all get a little bit of that.
We all get a little. So for less than $5, you'll be performing that.
Mm-hmm. Happily.
What a steal.
Yeah. So anyway, that is, but back to Paranoid Fight. Let's wrap this one up. Because it was just, you know, it's, I do feel kind of funny, like, giving away these spoilers to people. Because, like, now if you do go and watch it, you're going to know what happens. But
yeah. Part of the movie is, you know, not knowing right away. So, sorry. But you were warned.
You were warned. But this movie is good for somebody who's just kind of, like, trying to chill out. It's kind of like an eerie, quiet movie. So you can just kind of, like, put it on and vibe a little bit.
Yeah. Had some Chipotle.
Oh, yeah. It's Chipotle day over here. Mm-hmm. It's once a week. Chipotle day is once a week.
We've kind of been slipping lately. We should not be talking about Chipotle. They're not sponsoring us.
Never mind. Harry, bleep out every time we say Chipotle. It's bleep day. So they don't ever know. The listeners don't get to know what we eat. And then they have to pay the extra $5 to know.
If you want to sponsor us, we'll pretend that we buy your product once a week.
It's whatever day.
There's been a lot of shameless plugging on this.
Yeah. But yeah, so now to the second rating. So how do you feel about it walking away from it?
And processing. Now that we've had a chat about it.
Mm-hmm.
Five.
So
I'm raising it a point because I feel like the first rating is supposed to be like really just your entertainment value.
Yeah.
But even while watching it, I knew what it was doing was more artful than that.
Mm-hmm.
So five.
Sure. And I'm going to go probably a 7 for sentimental value. Some points are there. I just like it. I think it's a really pretty movie. I think that it's...
Do you want another fun fact?
Well, yeah.
It was filmed at Burnside Skate Park in Portland, which was also made illegally by skaters.
Were there dead bodies under the what are they called? Rinks?
Ramps?
Ramps?
Skate ramps?
Rinks? Bowls? Like, you got...
Ramps. It's a skate park, and there are ramps in a skate park.
Yeah, but they're like the cement bowls. Is that still a ramp? I thought a ramp was just the wood thing.
We're not skaters.
Clearly. I'm not a professional, and I'm definitely not a professional skater.
I can
skater.
Only name Tony Hawk.
And ramps.
And ramps. Yeah, no, I don't know anything else except for that. Paranoid Park is Burnside Skate Park. And it really was built illegally.
So you too, if you're in the, what, Seattle? Portland?
Portland.
Sorry. If you're in the Portland area, you too can visit Paranoid Park.
We can talk about our cats on the air.
Yeah. our cats' physiques. Are we body shaming moms now talking about our kids?
No, I'm only concerned that she has like worms or diabetes or something. The same rule for going on to WebMD when you have symptoms. Also, like, don't do that about your cat either.
No, that's even worse. You're like, I'm allowed to suffer. My child cannot.
My child cannot suffer. I am worried. She's just been eating up a storm. I did, honestly, the rational thing is I switched foods.
Oh, nice.
And I think she just really loves this food.
Mm.
She's just gobbling it up.
She's like, so delicious. Thank
you. Num, 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 num. And then, you know, a little weight gain's not a big deal.
No. She's a very beautiful lady.
Just don't Google it.
I won't Google it. Murph is a freak anyway, so.
Murphy has never gained a single ounce.
Like, if you want to know somebody who's probably has worms, it's him.
Yeah, the tapeworm or whatever that just eats all your food out of your stomach.
Don't do Yum. That.
I don't like how that sounds. Sorry. Your balls. Sorry. Okay, anyway.
Anyway, back to today's episode, the second movie we talking about.
The Handmaiden. This I liked.
I loved. So good.
It was very good.
Exciting. Gay.
Yeah.
Like romance.
More than gay. Erotic.
Like, yes. And like,
it's like so pornographic.
So many twists and turns and things.
But wow. Not in a way that was like impossible to follow.
No.
Like, let's, you know, keep in mind the last two movies we reviewed. Like, these twists and turns were like, you know, like uncovering a mystery.
Yeah, very. Oh.
Not like trying to keep up with the narrative.
No, exactly.
Yeah.
Just a great watch. So, Seal, can you tell us some facts about The Handmaiden?
It's also based on a book.
Nice.
Did you know that?
No, but that's a great connection between the two.
That's pretty much the only connection between the two. Yeah, this is a bucket episode, so...
So you get what
no
you get.
Rules.
No rules. Free no balling. Rules.
It's based on a book called The Fingersmith, which was written by Sarah Waters, and it's actually in Victorian England.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. Yeah. So the filmmaker obviously changed the setting big time.
Yeah.
Not only timeline-wise, if I'm... remembering this correctly, Victorian's like the 1800s. And this takes place during the Japanese colonial rule over Korea, which is, I have it written, 1910 to 1945.
Yeah, because like that's where I was confused. So where is the director from? Like, where is this movie based out of?
Korea.
Korea.
But the Japanese were ruling over them.
Right,
the
yeah. And I just thought that that was such an interesting thing, too, not watching it with subtitles, to have the subtitles switch back between Korean and Japanese, because to my uneducated ear,
yeah,
it was hard to tell the difference.
Yeah, I had no idea.
But then, like, once I started reading them and, kind of noticing patterns while reading it, it was really cool to hear that.
Yeah.
And kind of, yeah. And just, like, the status behind knowing each language that they talked about, the, you know, there was such, like, a conversation about.
Yeah, everyone was at a different level literacy-wise.
And they wanted, like, Korean, like, there was a lot of Korean people that wanted to be Japanese, mm-hmm. that wanted to get out of Korea, or there were the people that were Korean that felt passionately about, like, being Korean, you know what I mean? Like, there was right. such, like, a conversation about... that, like, status holding.
Yeah. I mean, to put it in our, like, American terms, it's, like, you know, people who are under colonial rule. The difference between, like, you know, trying to reclaim your identity versus, like, assimilating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought it was... there was, like, some really good villains in this. And
oh, my God.
Like...
well, talking about the colonial stuff again, that's why the uncle had all of his money. Because he sold out his country.
Oh, yeah.
Just another little tidbit. Which, apparently, there's a word for people who did that during this time. I don't remember what the word was. It's Korean.
Sure.
But it's, like, there was a derogatory term for people who did that. Who, like, helped the Japanese take over Korea. Who were Korean. So, like, they betrayed their country.
So, is that the same as... what is the word I'm thinking of? It starts with a P.
I don't know.
People, royal people get accused of doing it all the time. Like, they are working for the other side. They're like...
double agents.
Nope. Mm-mm. It's like one word. I keep wanting to say arson, but that is just not it. It's like...
I mean, there's also the story...
treason! 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 I was thinking of treason. Not a P. That's a T.
That's a T.
Is that like kind of like treason?
Sure, it's, but not exactly the same, because there was never a shift of power. Like, if you're getting caught for treason, I feel like it's like you're trying. Well, I guess it could be the same thing. I just talked myself in a circle there. I just said
no. Yeah, but like, so like treason is getting caught by the people that you're coming from.
Treason is trying to take down your government.
Your own.
Yeah.
And what this uncle did was try to sell out what he was doing to the Japanese. So it was like to go forward instead of to be caught by the backwards.
I don't really know what we're different.
Yeah, that's a hard one to try to explain.
Well, delete that. The point is that there is a word for it in Korean.
Sure.
It might be the same thing as treason.
That would be, that's an interesting.
But it's like the word, the Korean word was a name for that kind of person.
Sure.
Like you are a blank.
Yeah.
If you do that.
Got it. Oh, that's really interesting. So like that, like
he's one of those.
Right. And do you know by any chance in the book what that uncle was?
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? Like what was he accused of or like what was he doing?
I don't know anything about the book.
Interesting. Be an interesting look. So now
there's a BBC show based on the book in regular Victorian.
Oh, really?
Terms. Yeah.
Should check that out.
Check it out.
So I guess for a little bit of background, should we get into what the movie was about?
Yeah. Well, first things first, from 2016.
Love that. New.
Directed and written by Park Chan-wook.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry in advance for all these names that we're going to say badly, but it just has to be done.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically what happened was.
Mm-hmm. What happened was.
A young pickpocket is instructed by her pickpocket leader. I don't know. They're kind of just like a ragtag bunch of thieves in Korea. And she's sent to live with this countess, Hideko?
Mm-hmm.
Hideko? Hideko.
I think it's Hideko.
Whatever. Sorry. And the scheme is that the handmaiden, what's her name again?
She has a few different names.
Yeah, it was Okja and then also Soon.
It was like, I can't even remember. I can see it in the word. It was
yeah,
like,
in the subtitles.
Yeah, like S-A-K-O-O. It's like
Sookhee is how it's spelled. Sookhee. Anyway. Jeez. So the handmaiden gets sent there to try to convince this countess to marry her pickpocket leader.
Mm-hmm.
The count.
The count.
Yeah. And so it gets steamy
mm-hmm.
because the handmaiden and the countess fall in love. And she doesn't really want to marry the count.
No.
Like, he's just a gross man.
Yeah. And I think we should remember that the countess is previously engaged to her
uncle.
Yeah, her uncle. So her wife's, or her wife? Her aunt's husband.
Yes.
Who has passed.
The aunt has passed. Mm-hmm. The uncle is still alive.
And yeah, so engaged he's
to her.
Engaged to her and just kind of a very abusive caretaker over her.
Yeah. Physically, he makes her, like, read pornographic texts to groups of men.
Yeah, and
like, as a small child.
Yes.
Into her adult life.
And, like, be and like so, you know, if people, like, I thought that was a interesting take because, obviously, like, I had never really thought about that. I guess that's not obvious, but I just hadn't ever thought about that. I had never thought about, like, porn didn't just randomly start. You know what I mean? Like, it has been going on for so long. Is that, like, I'm, like, the questions that arose during this movie were, like, is this what happened? Like, do you know?
Not exactly. Finish your question because I don't know if I know the thing that you're asking.
Okay. I just want everybody to know she gave me a look. She started raising her eyebrows at me. And when she does that, she might know what I'm.
I know.
She knows the answer to my question.
You haven't even asked it yet, though, so I don't know.
So I'm just wondering, like, is it true? Like, is there a history of young girls, women, whoever, reading pornographic literature to groups of men instead of actual pornography. Like, I'm not talking like going to a brothel, you know, obviously, like, that's a whole, any kind of like sex work is like a different type, right. but
this is like a peep show or yes, like exactly. wherever you go, like where you're an audience member.
Yeah.
So I would not be surprised.
No.
I don't know the answer to that.
Cool. I just thought it seemed more realistic than I kind of thought it would be or something.
I
like
do I do have a related tidbit.
Tell me.
On that.
Yeah.
Is all those texts are real texts.
Oh.
What?
So we don't know if somebody was reading them to groups of yes, creepy men.
But those stories that she was reading, one in particular is called Jinping Mei. And it dates back to 1610.
What?
Yeah, it's the one where, like, she eventually acted it out with the mannequin.
Oh, yeah, and they're, like, hanging in the air.
Yeah, so it's, like, this notorious old text that was, like, full of crazy, kinky sex scenes. Like, I think it said there were 72 of them total in this whole book.
72?
72 different sex scenes. We only saw one of them in the movie.
Yeah.
But, like, just crazy shit. Like, obviously, the one we saw was, like, heavy on the asphyxiation stuff. Mm-hmm. But apparently, this book detailed, like, they wouldn't call them fetishes then, mm-hmm. but we're calling them fetishes now. Like, crazy stuff.
Right.
Apparently. I didn't read it.
Yeah. And so, the whole thing is that she was brought up by this uncle and, like, he was like, I'm going to teach her to read. And so, the whole first half of the movie, you're thinking, oh, she's just, like, learning to read.
Yeah, that's nice that her uncle's teaching her to read. You don't know what she's reading.
Well, you know he's bad. Like, you know that first of all, his lips and tongue are black.
Because he keeps licking his pen.
Like, it's disgusting.
He's horrendous.
He is like, if you've ever seen Spirited Away, you know the coal guy who has all, like, the little dust mites as his friends?
He was nice.
Yes, I know. I'm not trying to speak ill of him because we love him.
We love the coal miner.
But he's a spider, right? Like, he's a Spider-Man. He's got lots of, not the Spider-Man, but a Spider-Man.
Spider-based
man. and the uncle, this creepy fucking uncle, seems like the villain version of that man. Like, he seems like they're related, and he's like this nasty relative.
He also wears the tiny round glasses.
That might be it. And he has like crazy hair. Like, it's sticking up in all directions.
Because he's so much worse. Because, like, you know, reading the literature aside, he was also, like, beating her.
Yeah.
And, like, taking her down to the basement, which we don't know what the basement is for almost the entire movie, but we know that it's bad.
Yeah.
Because Hideko was given poison just in case she was going to get taken to the basement. Like, she'd rather die.
Yeah, and he uses it as a threat. A lot, you know, like, there's a point when they're leaving, or the uncle is leaving, and he, to make sure that Hideko doesn't run away, what he says is, don't forget about the basement.
And she's like, oh, fuck.
Like, it's a scary thing, and he's like an emotional, physical abuser of this child.
Not to mention that he's gonna marry her.
Yeah, not good. I don't like him at all.
They really just had no good male characters in this. They said men are evil.
I'm down. Okay, yeah.
Especially paired with, like, you know, a whole lesbian love story, which is, like, you know, in contrast, such a cute love story.
Yeah. And I just loved that all of the twists that kind of came out were just these, like, really pivotal, like, truth-telling situations.
Right.
Like, it was never, like, I don't know. It wasn't like, and then this happens. It was more like, hey, actually, I've been doing this, and, you know.
Sorry, I was lying to you.
Yeah, like,
here's the truth.
Here's the truth.
Like, okay, here's the lie that I told, and here's my truth. Let's team up.
Yeah, and, like, I'm down for a good team up. Like, it gets
between
me.
The two women.
Yeah.
The men, obviously, were just fucking around.
Well, right, but I will say that the head pickpocket did do his first truth telling too. Like, that was the first.
Oh yeah, that's true.
That was the first twist.
You're right.
I just feel so weird, like, giving away movies like this, especially to, like,
spoilers always.
Spoilers always. But I also, I'm gonna think about this deep in my heart and feel where my limits are with telling everything, because I do want people to watch them.
Right, but the idea is that you would watch them and then listen to
this. Oh, and then
otherwise,
listen.
No one would know anything that we're talking about.
True.
Okay. Like, nobody wants to listen to this with zero context. It just wouldn't be entertaining.
Can somebody confirm or deny?
Do you like this?
Hey, tweet us. Tweet us. Do you like it that we tell you what happens throughout the whole thing? I think that we're just going to go with yes, because it's us finally getting to talk about the movie after not being able to talk about it.
Well, yeah, it's a we guilt already thing. Decided that we're doing spoilers. I know. Get over the guilt
thing. I have a guilt thing about really...
Jaylee has a guilt thing.
I have a guilt thing, and this is...
in all areas.
Yeah, so here it is, out at play. I feel guilty.
Should we also discuss your trauma?
Yeah. Yeah, you guys want to know what happened to me? Just kidding. Ooh. I'm not telling you until... I know you.
But it won't take long after that.
It won't take that long after that. Anyway, away from my trauma.
Stop yelling into the microphone, away from my trauma. Anyway.
So, we're just going to go all in. So, the first spoiler, first twist with the uncle who originally goes, and he's been like supposedly kind of stalking the Countess. Being like, I'm just trying to get your fucking family's money. Mm-hmm. He's like, I've been doing this.
He went to a reading, like, yeah. Staking it out. This like, jumps past in time. Like, this is before
yes.
The first story. It jumps around a little.
It does, but not in a confusing way.
No, not at all.
In a very kind of linear-ish
yeah.
way like, to, like, unraveling of a story. Yeah. But he goes there, to, like, kind of get a hold of all their money. And then he realizes... that, what's her name?
Hideko.
Hideko is, like, kind of like a stone cold, like...
Well, she's a lesbian.
Yeah, but he didn't know that to start. He just knew that she was, like...
Not gonna love him.
No.
Well, they do talk about that.
They do talk about that, but that's not what I meant. Like, she is... I do think that she's... She's closed off. She has some walls up, but she also is just like kind of like stone cold business is kind of what it seems like. She's not really here. Right. She's not really touchy feely, which is right. obviously because she's had this like horrible childhood.
Yeah.
Where she just doesn't get to express her emotions. Yeah. That's where Suki. Where Suki comes in, and she gets to like get in touch with her
yeah.
emotions, because the second twist. Seal, do you want to talk about the second twist?
I mean, it's not so much of the twist so much as like the truth revealing.
Sure, okay. The next, let's talk about
it. It's not so much like the past being revealed. It's just this moment where they both acknowledge that they had been lying to each other.
Yeah.
Like, well, actually at that moment, so it happened right after Hideko felt kind of betrayed by Suki, because Suki was encouraging her to get married, even though they had already like, kindled their love affair.
They did the duty. Duty? Yeah. They did the dirty. They didn't do the duty. They did do the dirty. Very sexily.
And they showed the whole thing. This is a rated R film. This is like...
There were no lips. You only saw nips.
No lips, just nips.
No lips, just nips. And lots of kissing.
We should come up with our own rating system.
Yeah, for how sexy a scene is.
Nips?
Yeah. Lips.
Nips and lips.
Yeah.
I don't know what's after that.
Because I feel, you know, because there's plenty where you see like full.
Well, right. Okay. But I guess I didn't mean so much like what kind of genitalia you see.
Sure,
I mean
sure.
like you see the whole act.
Yeah.
Like, you know, wide angle lens. Like you see it go down.
Yeah.
You don't have to see a lip for you to know that sex is happening.
Understood.
In a very big way.
Yeah. I guess I just meant that it's. I'd have a hard time giving an X. Did you say R rated or X rated?
R.
Nope, R sounds good. Anyway, continue. I thought you were giving it an X rating. I was like, you don't see enough.
I mean, almost. Not quite.
No. There's only
some of the drawings were definitely X rated.
Sure.
That's actually another tidbit I have, but we should continue.
Okay, so anyway, so
the truth. So they both reveal that they were tricking each other. Like Suki says, I was planning to steal all your money, and Hideko says, I was planning to send you to this madhouse so I could run away with all my money. So they were like, well, we love each other. Let's just run away with the money together.
Yeah. Like, let's figure this out and do it together.
And it does happen in kind of a timeline way where it is kind of a reveal, like that it happened earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. The way that they, like, constructed that whole narrative was very cool.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of that, like, structure.
Yeah, because it was, like, it was not exactly, like, bit by bit, like, early 2000s rom-com, like, step by step, watch what happens in this story. It was more, like, here's what you know now. Here's what you didn't know before, and here's how it all came together at the end. You know
and
what I mean?
And here's another little thing that I didn't tell you earlier.
Yeah, exactly.
And yeah. Now here's the happy ending.
Yes. Oh, my God.
It was very cool. It was, like, pieced together, like, not in a confusing way at all.
Yeah, and I just...
But in, like, a create... Like, I hadn't seen that story structure before, no. You know?
Yeah, and I just thought that, like, just story-wise, I thought it was really sweet. The part when Hideko...
Mm-hmm.
Just calls Suki, like, her knight in shining armor. Like,
savior.
Her savior.
She says. When they're destroying the library.
Yes, because this library is full of these, the books that Seal brought up just a second ago, that, like, these ancient, are they ancient? Would you consider 1600, what is?
No, ancient is prehistoric.
Okay, so very old books. Not ancient, but very
Renaissance
old.
Renaissance era? I don't know if that applies to
vintage books. Korea. Sex books.
Vintage sex
books. That she was made to read. And so it was kind of like Suki went in there and was like, I can't believe you've been doing this. No. Horrible.
Sorry. This happened to you.
And she just destroys all of the, any kind of lucrative funds that he had that where he could like, because he was kind of somebody that would not only host the shows that would.
He'd auction off these books.
Yeah.
Too,
yeah.
Because they're all really old, obviously, and valuable.
Yes. So.
They just destroyed it all. They, like, threw it in the pond and ripped it apart. And, like, honestly, I know that it was supposed to be, like, a big, like, victorious moment. It hurt a little bit.
Of course it hurt you.
Like, seeing all that stuff destroyed, I'm like, I know he was really evil, but that book is history. Like, why'd you have to take it out on the books? That's all. Like, this is a 1600s manuscript.
You know, I just, do you think that if you had... You didn't have access to the history that you have now. You would see the importance in the books that they had at their disposal.
Maybe, because I feel like even before I knew anything, I was like, that's an old book. That's sexy. You know what I mean? Like, even just on a, like, purely surface aesthetic level.
Yeah.
When I see something old, I'm like, that's beautiful.
You hear that? You hear that, old guys out there? You hear that?
Hold on a minute there, buddy.
Seal is into older, more beautiful, refined, ancient items.
A little salt and pepper.
Okay, so yeah.
You want to know another tidbit?
Yes.
We're on the topic of old historic things. There's another real thing in there. What do you remember?
Her hair clip?
No.
Okay, what is it?
The tentacle porn.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that image?
Yeah, it's in the book.
Yeah, it's a picture. It's a woodblock print.
Is it for real?
Dated from 1814.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah, 100%. This is a real thing. It's called The Fisherman's Wife's Dream or something like that. And I'd actually recognized it.
Of course you did.
And I don't know if it's weird to be familiar with 19th century tentacle porn, but I am.
Yeah, you are. For anybody else, I might say it's weird, but for you, it feels normal.
Not because of... It's actually... I mean, I knew it independently before this, but it's also in some episodes of Mad Men.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's gifted to Peggy by Roger Sterling, and it's kind of like a weird predatory move, but then she hangs it up in her office and is like, screw you, I own it.
Nice.
Which is, like, kind of an interesting parallel to this movie.
Yeah.
Where they're, like, destroying it for the sake of their female empowerment. And she's, you know,
putting it, it. Yeah. Because when is Mad Men from, like, the... Is that supposed to be the 50s?
60s?
So 10 years later in America.
Honestly, give or take. But that's a real thing.
Damn. And, you know, like, tentacle porn...
Let's talk about tentacle porn.
Like, what? I mean, I kind of get the appeal. Do you know what I mean? Like, I understand the, like, listen, I'm very pro porn, but I've just never really delved or been, what is the word I'm looking for? Not like, I never was interested to look deeper into tentacle porn. I watched some tentacle porn one time at a party because it was late at night and this guy put it on.
Was it? Bleep that out, Harry. Thank you.
Nope. His name is. Put tentacle porn on TV for us all to watch as a funny thing. And, it, you know, whatever. And
I actually had a similar experience with tentacle porn in the college dorms. So similar.
Yeah. So it's like, I mean, I've seen it, but it's just never been my shtick. And like, you know, I love, you know, I like to hear people's opinions on that kind of stuff because, you know, it is a fantasy. Like, why not be down for like a really out there fantasy about what you're into? You know, like very cool, whatever. So I don't know much about it in the grand scheme, but it is interesting for me to know that it goes back so far. Like people have always wanted it. What I meant by like I get the appeal is
yeah, you want to take that back?
No, no, I don't want to take that back. I actually want to go further into it. That's a lot of arms. That's a lot of arms to hold you.
I guess they can get a lot of work done.
Yeah, like that's like a lot of stimulation in a lot of different places. At all the times. Do you know what I mean? Like, yes. Humans really only got four limbs. If you didn't know.
You really just took a second to pause. Like, she just paused, looked at her hands and her lap just to make sure. Humans have four limbs. Give or take, usually. We're not ableist here.
Yeah, no. Like, I'm down. Like, but tentacles are a whole different ball game here. So
I feel like based on my single, you know, 20-second experience with it and also what I read on the Wikipedia page looking at this woodblock print, one article or something that Wikipedia was talking about, shout out to Wikipedia,
yeah.
Was that this original woodblock print was like the description in the image was very much consensual.
Oh.
Whereas modern day renditions are less so. They are non-consensual, usually.
Okay. Because, like, I mean, and, like, from all I can tell from the not any tentacle porn that I'm currently watching.
Except for the movie.
You know what? It was a picture.
There was an octopus.
It was actually a woodblock print, if you didn't know.
Did you have a point to make?
I just meant that I did. That I have no idea what the consensuality, blah, 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 of tentacle porn today.
Yeah, who knows what's out there at this point?
Again, drop some comments. I would love to know what people think about tentacle
porn.
Do
you watch tentacle porn?
You know, at Double Exposure Podcast at Twitter. Tell me what you think about tentacle porn.
Episode 2, we've already delved deep.
It's only going to get
the fetish world.
I'm ready for it in all of the ways. Anyways.
No holds barred here.
But... So I just thought that was a really sweet moment when, like, she was her savior. And, like, she showed her, like, tenderness and love that, like, obviously she just was never getting.
Yeah, and she had someone defending her.
Yeah, and it was just, like, you know, she was started as just, like, even a friend. And they both started as manipulating each other to finding that, like, in their cores they were...
Like, they were both being taken advantage of by men.
Yeah. And once they kind of, like, shed those things, they...
Very feminist.
Very... Oh, I loved them.
But not in such, like, a hokey way. Like, I feel like even saying that, I'm like, that is almost a cliched trope at this point. This didn't feel like that.
No.
Like, it's not, like, women bonding together against their oppressed... Like, it didn't feel like that. It felt really authentic and... emotional and cool.
Yeah.
Felt cool.
And it felt very cool and very just loving in this way, like.
Very sweet and tender between them.
And also burn that shit down. Like, they were like, they were like, fuck everybody. We're going to go live our happy lives together.
I wish instead of tearing down the beautiful old Victorian library full of priceless manuscripts that they had gone downstairs and maybe destroyed the basement.
Maybe the basement was too scary. Plus, they needed Oh, spoilers.
We're going to talk about
they that. Needed, the men needed to die in the basement.
Yeah, which they did.
Which they did.
In a very horrible way.
So the which uncle, you already know because you watched it before you're listening to this.
But we should talk about the basement anyway, though, because there were so many dicks in that room.
Yeah.
Because apparently this uncle had been severing genitalia, or I don't know how he was obtaining it, but he did have a big paper cutter that he was using to cut off the count's fingers.
Yeah.
So we can maybe deduce that he was also cutting off genitalia.
And he had a giant octopi.
It was just one octopus. And apparently the plural of octopus is octopuses.
Yeah, I don't like that. I will refuse to say that.
Like, how many middle school know-it-alls out there was just, they were just telling me the wrong thing this whole time.
There was a big-ass octopus in a big-ass aquarium. Actually, it was a big-ass octopus in a pretty small aquarium.
Yeah, which made that happy in there.
Which that octopus looked squished. And
do you think the octopus died, too, with the mercury poisoning that the two men died from? Would that sink into the water? Isn't that, that sucks.
My mouth is wide open right now. That is something.
Did the octopus die?
I didn't even think about that sweet baby's life. He just was just in there. But you know,
captive in this room full of dicks in jars.
And he's just another dick in a jar because they love tentacle porn.
Octopus are more than just phallic instruments.
Yeah.
You know they might be aliens?
Yes, I was just going to say. I do feel that if he didn't die from the mercury poisoning, which is something that I would like to look up to see the safety of it.
If they didn't show it in the movie.
Did it happen?
Let's just decide that the octopus didn't die in the mercury
he
poisoning.
He lived!
The octopus lived!
Okay, here's a segment. What happened to the octopus after? Oh, yeah, I like this. So
what
happened to him? What did he do after the mercury in the room?
We're deciding.
Why not? It was left open-ended.
He crawled out.
And then what did he do?
I don't know. There's that whole Zen fountain in the library. He probably got there. They're aliens.
Yeah.
You know, we can trace our DNA. Like, pretty much all animals on Earth can get traced back to, like, a single point at least. Obviously, the record is sketchy. We don't have everything except for octopus.
And eels.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So they're just, like, not related to us. Like, they're the furthest things from us possible. What else do we have to say about this movie? It's definitely continuing in this tradition of erotica.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, you know, having all these old images of pornography, essentially, and then having all these, like, super erotic scenes in the movie itself, it's, like, seems like a little... But timeline, build upon the tradition type shit.
You know what I thought was interesting, though, is that, like, just as much as the erotic scenes were, like, important in the movie, Hideko's experience with not wanting to have sex with people was just as prominent. And...
Yeah. Well, right. I mean, I'm not talking about these scenes as if they're, like, the turning point of the whole movie.
No, I know, but I'm just saying that I think that that was a cool and interesting part, too. Or,
yes.
Like...
Yes.
Is that she... It wasn't just, like... Like, they just focused on these, like, very sexy scenes, but it was also, like, this is her relationship with sex right now.
Yeah.
Is that she has a kind of a torn-apart relationship with sex because she has been abused from a young age, emotionally, sexually, physically, blah, 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 blah.
Also exposed to all these, like, really sadistic kinks,
yeah,
and accounts of sex,
and she was hypersexualized from day one.
Yeah,
like that's just kind of, and so for us to like experience her life through both her boundaries and hardships, along with her finding like love and comfort, is like I think really special. So I think that like even in how like I don't want to say pornographic, like visual. Their like sex scene did feel like sweet still. It wasn't this like,
it oh did, yeah, 100%.
It didn't feel like, it didn't to me feel like porn in the way that other movies can like portray sex. Like they were kind of like, I saw that scene as like them kind of like getting to finally like let go and explore sexuality.
Yeah. And it was almost like kind of goofy. Like, yeah, kind of like the laughed. Oops, haha. Like, you know, it was very nice.
It was like, no, and there was two and a half, like, pretty, you know, big sex scenes. And they kind of like giggled and were sweet with each other the whole time. And I think that that was like a really.
It didn't feel exploitative or really that performative. Like, maybe a titch. Yeah. Just because it was like. It was like highly choreographed, perhaps.
Sure. Yeah.
But beyond that, it didn't feel like it was like a big show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I thought that that was really nice and
detailed, but.
Detail. Yeah. Yeah. But also just so sweet. Like, I just thought
they were so cute.
And, but every scene, even remotely sexual with a man, because of her background with the abuse and stuff, like, you could tell, like, it was so repulsive. Like, she had wanted nothing to do with it. She was cold, like.
Well, they were horrible.
And they were horrible. Like, it was just a whole different experience. So I just loved her dimension as a character. Yeah. Hideko. Like, she just really kind of had this character. It's just like kudos to the character writing, I think, too. Like, to.
Yeah. To like, be able they really to, had a full map.
Like, she was just such a character with such depth. And I just really, really liked her. And,
I agree.
I think that she was really great.
I kind of like that they did this flip-flop, because you saying that made me think of Suki. And even though I would say that she's also a pretty, like, in-depth character, I feel like they did this kind of funny flip-flop in the second half. Where the first half, Suki, like, you think she's the pickpocket screwing over Hideko.
Yeah.
And Hideko's, like, this really naive, like, really timid kind of character. And Suki's, like, the conniving trickster.
Yeah.
But then in the second half, you realize, like, no, Suki's actually just kind of, like, a doopy-doo.
Yeah.
Trying to figure it out, like, is equally more so naive, was Hideko was actually scheming all along. And is much more of, like, a dominant character.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they did a full reversal there.
And they just eliminated, like, the stupid girl trope.
Yeah.
Like, they're both, like, smart, crafty, emotional, full-bodied, like, beings. Instead of being like, haha, I'm going to take over. Like, I'm just going to.
Huh, so naive. Yeah. I'm such a virgin.
Like, you know? Yeah, exactly. It was like, actually, no. They're both going to fuck your life up and you're all going to die.
But they also both have that, like, sense of, you know, light innocence about them without it being, like, a lack of agency.
Yeah, and I love that, like, it came forth in their love.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, that's a good, like, I feel like that's a good love story. It's like when it wasn't like, I found you, now I'm complete. It was like, I found you, now I can fucking, like, be. I'm just still doing me, 100%.
But now I finally have, like, a team to work with.
Yes.
Like, there was a true partnership.
Yeah.
As opposed to whatever the fuck else.
Yeah, so I thought that was great. I have a question for you, Seal. Mm-hmm. Do you have any more tidbits, first of all?
I don't really think so.
Okay, I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Four top characters, right? We're just going to go in the top four. Uncle, well, maybe we shouldn't do the evil ones. Maybe I will skip the evil ones. We're just going to go with Suki and Hideko.
Okay.
Sweeties. We love them.
We love them.
What are their signs?
We could do, well, the evil ones are too hard to do.
Maybe you're could, because, let's, I don't want to ever make somebody that uncle. Like, because that is, he is an outlier of any sorts. But we could do the Count.
Sure.
He's evil, but like, in a different way.
But when you can see someone's personality past their evilness, that's a good opportunity to do that.
Yeah, because it's...
But, like, the uncle was just purely evil, and, like, there's no sign that's just automatically...
Yeah,
like,
and I would never...
Predatory
I don't,
sadist.
Yeah, that's... I'm not going to do... Like, I don't want to do that, so...
That can come in any form.
Any sign can be that.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. So we're just going to go with the... How about just the top three, then? So...
Sure.
The Count, Suki, and Hideko. What are your thoughts? Let's start with Hideko.
It's really hard for me to think right now.
Okay. I'm also thinking now, I literally...
Libra.
You think Libra?
I'm just throwing that out there as my first...
As your first thought. Out,
you know?
Okay. It's funny because I just want everybody to know, also listening, it's written on my hand because I thought of this idea as we were recording. So I don't have
a sign.
Just so I remember. I'm going to take a picture of it. I'll put it on my Twitter. If you guys see it, just I'm acting like I'm on Twitter famous now. I'm not.
We're trying to be. Okay. So my first throwaway answer, which maybe I can back up, is Libra.
Mm-hmm.
Because there is for sure that like airy, beautiful, like elegant quality about her.
Mm-hmm.
But is a little bit more of like a mediating planner leader than just, you know, just being pretty.
Yeah. I would say Leo for her for that same reason.
Interesting.
Because I think that she does have the, that.
Way better performer.
Yeah. And
she is pulling an act.
And I, and like, I hate the stereotypical Leo shit. Like, I just think it's so baloney. Like,
thanks for saying that.
Cecile is a Leo. I just really think that it's a bunch of baloney. Like, I just think that, like, to say that every Leo is this, like, pompous, looking for the spotlight kind of person just doesn't seem right to me ever. Because that just, like, puts them all in one lane. No. Yeah. No.
There are plenty of insecure Leos.
and, like, there's a plenty of ways to, like, feel prideful. Anyway, I think that Hideko would be a Leo because I think that she is prideful. I think that she's been through a lot and she's really secretive.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that she has, like, a lot under the surface that she doesn't let people see. So, like, that her pride is just in the exterior shield that she kind of holds up.
Yeah.
Not to mention that.
Herself.
Yes. Not mm-hmm. to mention that she's beautiful. Not to mention that she, like, knows how to fucking work her shit. Like, I'm not saying that those parts of the Leo aren't there, too.
Right.
But I think that a part of Leo that does get skipped a lot is that, like, secrety or, like, depth. That it's, like, I kind of feel like a Leo, this is all coming off the top. A Leo is, like, a hole in the ground, but with, like, a really nice rug over it. So if you like the rug is beautiful, like it's the nicest rug you've ever seen, but like you step into that hole goes very deep, and that's what I feel like that's what Hideko's character is kind of like.
I think that's a good argument.
So that would be my
perhaps better than mine.
She's never said that to me before.
That's probably not true.
You hear that keyword there is probably.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay, so I'm going to go with how do you feel about Hideko being a Leo? Yeah, good?
I like it. I think there would be some other subtler placements elsewhere.
Sure, right. We're just going sun signs for all you astrology hoes out there like us. We're not trying to build a chart. We're just going.
No, this is just for fun. This is a fun game.
This is a fun game to play.
We have a lot of these. Stay tuned.
Yeah. So, okay. So then next up is Suki.
First thought was Gemini.
Oh, I could see that.
Again, this is just my first throwaway, but maybe that's where, like, the air sign quality is coming in for me. Like, still kind of the light, playful energy. Thinks she's doing something more than she actually is.
Kind of like, impulsive.
Think that she's, like, doing this deep trick.
Yeah.
But is really kind of not in it that hard. Is yeah. still kind of a pawn. Like, that seems kind of like a Gemini trivial nature to me.
Yeah, and I know I would agree with that too, because I do think that she's kind of, she is impulsive in those ways. Like, I think that destroying the library, makes and sense. I respect it. I'm here for the destroying of the library. I think that she did the right thing.
I like it as a symbol, but that's it.
And so I just
symbolically
think,
destroying, like, your...
The trauma, like, yeah. being able to be like, hey, like, I'm here for you, not for, like, what you're...
Yeah,
what
especially that these books were, like, literal tools in her exploitation
yeah.
and not just, like... Like, I completely understand it. Like, I don't want to say that...
No, I know.
And sound like I don't love that scene yeah. still in some way. It was just, like, you know, an inkling of pain that
mm-hmm.
happened. Just wanted to clarify that.
But, yeah, I just think that, I think Gemini sounds good because, and I do think that there's,
so giggly.
She's giggly.
She'd always laugh at these really, like, odd moments. Like,
yes.
where it wasn't really quite a joke, but she'd just be like, ha ha, like, go off.
And, like, with these, like, kind of big emotions, like, it was very emotion first, like, kind of very raw, which I kind of feel is.
But can also be spicy. Like, the way that she said, like, still marry the Count to Hideko after they had sex.
Mm-hmm.
that was like kind of mean. That was like a flip floppy Gemini move.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I just, but like also like her, the way that she also just was like ride or die for Hideko, I feel like in the end, was like, let's do anything. Let's do it. Like, let's fucking
especially
go.
Especially that there was an adventure involved.
Yes, exactly.
Like, this is what I'm tying myself to.
This yes, like, here great. We go. I'm on this. Oh, you're going to send me to this madhouse? Sweet. Because there's a mysterious fire now?
Her friend said it.
Who was her friend?
From the pickpocket ragtag group. She posed as a firefighter. So, okay, she didn't set it, I don't think. But she came in. This happened really fast. She came in dressed as a firefighter, and then I don't really know how it turned into Suki getting out. Like, it was all very,
no,
like,
that
fast,
part was all very fast. Scene. But it was a fire.
There was a fire, and that's how Suki got out of the mental hospital.
But anyway, like, all of that seems very, like, let's fucking go, which is kind of like what I kind of feel like with the Gemini.
I feel for her. That.
But, yeah, I definitely... What and her and she just had like a big confidence about her too that just kind of reminded
me. Yeah, just
you're like
bold,
like kind of yeah. Like from the beginning, she's like, "No, I'm going. No, I'm going."
Just like completely ungrounded, like pure risk taking.
What is that? Mutable? Is that what Gemini is? Mute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of just like ready to fucking go.
Like fuck it. I don't know.
Put me in. Put me in, coach. I don't care what I'm going to do. I'm going to do it.
I've never played basketball in my life. Put me in.
Yeah,
that's exactly, big Gemini
exactly.
energy.
Oh, my God. Yes. Okay. And then the count.
Wily, for sure.
Wily, but steadfast, like ready to go, has a plan.
Yep.
And is going to execute that plan and has plan Bs. Like, lots of plan Bs.
But still fell in love with Hideko.
But, like, understood.
You know, so, like, not so rigid.
Do you have an idea? Do you have an idea?
Nope, it's kind of beginning to form.
Me too, but can we say our idea at the same time?
I don't think mine's ready to be an idea.
Should we just talk about him a little bit more? Because then I would like to say it at the same time.
Okay.
Okay, so let's talk about his character's traits. So,
because then he also refused to talk about, like, to be fair, he never actually had sex with Hideko and was lying.
But he wanted
but he
to.
He still, like, refused to tell the uncle anything because he was like, how dare you ask me about my wedding night? Like, that is rude.
Yeah.
Like, an element of pride there and loyalty as well.
Yeah. Even though at that point, Hideko had already, like, fucked him off. Like,
I think I have an idea now.
I have an idea. Are you ready?
Yeah.
One, two, three.
Taurus.
Virgo.
Close.
Okay, that was close for both earth signs.
I said Taurus. She said Virgo, if that was
unclear
audio
to anybody.
I don't know.
I would think of Virgo. I think a Virgo has that plan.
That, yes, I agree with that. I think I said Taurus only for the added element of sentimentality.
Was he sentimental?
About Hideko, yeah.
I felt like he was just money driven. And not to say that Virgos are money-driven, but I feel like he was goal-driven.
I mean, that's Taurus, too. Material-driven.
That's true. He is material-driven. That's a fair.
I feel like I associate Virgo more with a little bit, I don't want to say submissive energy.
Sure.
I don't want to say victim energy, but in that kind of ballpark.
Sure.
The Taurus, I mean, that's not necessarily true. Like, a Virgo can certainly be assertive.
Yeah. And, like, you definitely, especially when it comes to, like, plans, and that's kind of what I'm thinking, is that, like...
The wiliness, again, this is the same mercurial energy that a Gemini has.
Yeah.
But in a Virgo.
They did come from the same ragtag group.
Yeah, those mercurial tricksters. And, okay, in terms of archetype, like, kind of myth fables to go along with the signs, I like yours better.
Nice. I never win these.
I only said certain conditions.
I know, but I'm going to take it as a win.
Yeah, I feel like, I mean, I guess I don't really have more arguments about why I thought Taurus. I think that his last-minute love...
I don't think he was loyal.
I think he was to Hideko at the end. Like, it only happened at the very end, and it only happened when he fell in love with her.
Sure.
So, like, obviously, this kind of, like, stubborn, earthly... like, not giving in to things, but once he did love her,
yeah,
he was not going to give up her secrets. He was not going to tell her uncle how her pussy tasted.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What the fuck?
Which shouldn't be hard to not give away anyway, obviously. But, like, I think definitely in those last few scenes, that came out more.
Yeah. I still think the Virgo plan-driven kind of, like, stubbornness plays a bigger role. That would, but I can see where you're saying with the Taurus thing, for sure, because it is, he was completely, like, materially, he was material-driven.
I think we're both right.
Nice. But, like, I think that, like, he, that is true. Like, I do, I don't really see him as a loyal person. And not to say that
he did sell out Suki.
He sold out Suki, and he was playing over the evil uncle. You know what I mean? Like, he was just climbing his way to the top for the money. And I know that at the end was different, but.
I was going to say, this is also why I don't like doing the villains that much.
Yeah.
Because I feel like evil kind of goes above what your star sign could possibly be. True. So all of these evil things that he was doing to people, like, that doesn't mean that Virgos or only Tauruses
are the evil ones. Shit. No, for sure.
That's where it gets foggy for me, because that doesn't seem so much like personality. It seems like evil, which is like just something separate.
It's just hard to, yeah, it's hard to diagnose either way. So
that was always going to be a little foggy.
And we knew that to start because we weren't sure. We almost
didn't put him in.
So I would say that he is somewhere between, he's an earth sign for sure.
Yeah.
Somewhere between Virgo and Taurus. Somebody stubborn, somebody loyal, somebody plan-driven, goal-driven, capable of love. Stubborn.
It's not worth doing for Paranoid Park, is it?
It's no.
It's too hard because I don't they're all think just kids.
They're kids, and it was just kind of, I guess we could try Alex.
It's hard because he was just so silent and broody, and it seems like his trauma took over his could see Aquarius. Yeah. Okay. A young Aquarius in the wild.
Yeah, that would be my first guess.
Like the appeal of Paranoid Park in the first place, where it's like kind of dangerous and kind of filled with all these misfit outcasts of society.
Mm-hmm.
Like the entire movie kind of had Aquarius energy.
Yeah. But that'd be my, that's my best guess for that one.
I agree with you, just right off the bat.
Happy Aquarius season, everybody.
Well, we're recording this, yeah, the 21st. Did it just start?
Yeah.
Hey.
Hey, all of our Aquarians, you all are beautiful. Love you very much. But anyway, I guess that kind of wraps it up. Should we do our ratings?
Let's we got to do our ratings. I am rating this one pretty highly.
Yeah.
I really liked this. It had a little sprinkling of art history for me to look into after the fact, so that puts my post rating high, as well as just the fact that, you know, everything about this plot was like fascinating and cool. I'm a big fan.
Apparently, give it a number.
I feel like both of them are the same and they're like an 8.5. rate the movie.
Okay. I would think that, honestly, I'm feeling the same way. And I'm kind of thinking of a new category, too.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry, but
that's okay.
It's only episode two. And my new category is rewatchable.
Like, whoa.
Like, how rewatchable? So it's, like, initial, and then it's after the fact. Like, how do you feel about it? Like, with the whole feeling. And then after that, it's the feeling of,
would I watch this
would
again?
You rewatch?
I would definitely watch this again.
I can't spell rewatch.
What are you rating this? I say yes to rewatch. That's a yes or no, right?
Yeah, let's do yes or no to rewatch.
Yes.
Okay, so initial reaction, which was kind of hard to say because I was very tired today from opening. I did watch this movie also today.
It's a big movie day.
I watched two movies today, and with this one, I did take a little nap in the middle. It was about 2 hours and 20 minutes, so that's a little long for me, but nonetheless, I'd still give it about an 8.
It was just like a visual.
It was so good. It was so good.
Like, even the setting, I feel like we didn't talk about that at all. But, yeah, like, the way that this movie just looked. was delightful.
Oh, it's delicious. So beautiful. And like
sink your teeth right into it.
And just like the way that the characters moved around in the settings was just great. So
I loved those shots that they did. Sorry, we're just
go for it. Yeah.
Where it was kind of looked like the camera was over someone's shoulder.
Yeah.
And it would like move, and it was like kind of like zooming in on someone through something. Like it almost looked like it curved around somebody to zoom into stuff.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I loved that.
I also loved one of the scenes that really stuck out to me. There were a few, actually, but one that I want to bring up is when they're about to escape, right? And they're going through the sliding doors to get to, like, the backyard or whatever the fuck they're in.
Mm-hmm.
And each door, it was just this, like, beautifully synchronized, like, sit at the door, open it, stand up, go to the next door, sit at the door, open it, stand up. And it was like kind of like you're like leading almost like the story itself where it was like, here's this first part. You see that? Open it up. Here's this new truth. Here we're sitting down here at this news part. Here we're reading this part of the story. We're getting this. Open it up. Okay. And then at the end, you get to see like the whole outside and the whole moon and the whole.
That was so beautiful.
So I wonder.
This movie was so graceful.
Yes.
Like because everything like, about it.
I kind of feel like that was like some beautiful like. Is there a word for something that's instead of foreshadowing, but like the equivalent of like foreshadowing after something?
I don't know if there's an exact word for it, but I mean, I think I get what you're saying, where it's like kind of mimicking the structure of the story.
Yeah, where it like kind of gives you like a wink back to like here's what exactly happened, which felt and like the whole thing was like they were with each other through it all.
Oh. God.
I loved it.
This movie was good.
So I will say that initial reaction was an 8. I'll say after, I'm honestly feeling like a 9. I'm moving it up.
I felt a little shicey with the 8.5.
Yeah.
I don't really have a good groove for our rating system.
No,
yet.
Me neither. And I honestly might give it a 10. No, I'm going to go with 9. It could have a 10, but I just don't have the calibration yet to give it a full 10 yet.
I don't know who we're giving the 10s to.
No, the 10 has to be something really, really good. But
this
can be
was really, really good.
I know, but can be revisited. Like,
if we have to come back after the fact and give this a 10 because we never watch another good movie again, we will.
Yeah, just so you know. Subject to change. And then rewatch, hell yeah. I will rewatch this with anybody wants to watch this. Like, it was so good. It was long, so please expect me to be on my phone for part of it, but once it starts getting juicy, I'm putting that phone down and we're gonna watch it all from start, like from that moment on.
Hell yeah. It was just so visually interesting. Like, yeah. I mean, okay, also I was trying to read subtitles, so I couldn't look away.
Yeah, which is so why I had to take the nap.
Also makes it a little more exhausting than a normal watch would.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it was so interesting to look at all the time.
Yeah.
I think partially I am a sucker for this, like,
do it.
Dark academia aesthetic.
Was it academia?
Academia.
No. Oh, I guess it's the library.
Yeah, 100%.
I forgot about the library
like,
for a second.
Do you remember in the beginning when they're talking about the building and they're talking about how it's, like, this blend of English Victorian and, like, whatever?
Yeah,
and
yeah. Loved it.
Yeah, shit's hot.
Yeah, it was honestly so
hot
good.
For that building.
Plus, you build it on Sims. I thought about that when they went out.
Whoa!
I thought about that once we were like, I'm gonna go down to the basement. I was like, and when he was like pulling the carpets up, you know what I mean? I was like, I wonder if Seal will make this on the Sims.
That would be so cool to make on the Sims, especially because the new pack that just came out is a lot of Japanese inspired architecture.
If anybody else plays The Sims, just so you know.
I love to build on The Sims. Well, so, highly rated, great movie. Yeah. We talked about this movie for an hour.
Yeah.
That might get cut down later. And we talked about Paranoid Park for like 10 minutes.
Which, it was just a harder movie to talk about, to be honest.
There's just not as much going on.
Yeah. It was more
and
of
a... And that's okay. That's what it's supposed to be.
It was more of a visual experience to us than... This one was, too.
It was also a lot shorter. Like, that was only maybe an hour and a half total, like, with credits and everything. And again, it was mostly him getting dressed.
And walking, yeah.
Either way, those are the two movies. They were both based on books.
Both based on books. And one thing I was going to bring up too, just quickly before we wrap it up, was the relationship with sex. I just did see that both of those movies had this like weird relationship with sex.
Oh, that's a great point.
Like, not Paranoid Park was not about sex and was not about sexuality necessarily, but there was a prominent point talking about like relationships and being 16 and like the act of sex being this like rite of passage and like, yeah.
And I feel like everything else about that movie being so watered down and mundane,
yeah,
makes that little tiny bit that much more important.
Yeah.
Like, there was only, like, two main things that happened, and one of them was that he murdered a guy, and the other one is that he had sex with his girlfriend.
For the first time, and then dumped her, like, was, like, not into it. So, like...
Yeah, and it was, like, I mean, interesting in the way that we're talking about dealing with trauma and sexuality together at the same time. Mm-hmm. Like, obviously, his trauma was not sexual, really, at all. So it differs in that way. But in the same way, like... Him in that scene, honestly, was really sad because he obviously seems so disconnected. Like, he's like, I just killed a man. How am I supposed to enjoy this right now? Like, the guilt was just taking over him.
Mm-hmm.
An interesting point. I did not connect that.
Yeah, I just think that, like, that would be one other little section that, like, yeah, could be connected. Is that they, because his, and like the sex is brought up a few times, you know, like they're supposed to be teenagers, so like sex mm-hmm. is brought up, and
all the other boys are like, I'm trying to get laid,
like, and he's like, I so don't want times. To I just killed a man, I have to deal with other things, I'm busy right now. So that being said, then it was like, yeah, it just felt like he was super dissociated from it, the same way that Hideko was dissociated from sex as well.
Yeah,
like it was just kind of this like look into a traumatized mind and heart with sex, and he was trying to live, what's his name, Alex, was trying to live this like normal teenage life after all of this, and his girlfriend was like, we gotta have sex, we're together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just a thought I had.
Good connection point, because again, these were bucket movies.
Yeah.
There's no guarantee that they were going to have anything in common.
No.
We got solid two.
We got two. They're both based on books, and there is some depth on sexuality.
Yeah. So, I mean, compared to our last episode, a little different. Since yeah. we accidentally watched movies that were based on each other.
That was also an accident, though.
True. We live by chance over here.
Yeah, roll the dice. So we're going to cheers and say thank you for listening to episode two.
Shouts out. Follow us on Patreon, follow us on Twitter, or don't. And just listen and don't give us any money at all. We don't care.
Yeah, we're just doing it anyway. Love you, bye.
Woo!